Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to the 14th edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. It's been about a week now since Iowa's last game. They played last Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, out at Nebraska in what was dubbed the first annual Heroes game. The Hawkeyes were not able to get out of Memorial Stadium with a victory. The Cornhuskers defeated Iowa 20-7 was the final. That score really might not have been indicative of just how dominant Nebraska was that afternoon. The game really kind of got off to I don't want to say a slow start. I mean, neither team could really move the ball effectively, but the game was going by fast. Like, the first quarter just flew by. Then the second quarter comes, Nebraska goes up 3-0, and then to me, the teams are exchanging punts, but then the drive of the game happened right before halftime. Nebraska executed a 15-play drive that consisted of 80 yards, capped it off with a touchdown pass that near the goal line that made it 10-0 right before the half. And to me, I think that really sucked the life out of Iowa's defense because, you know, instead of holding them to a field goal and it still being a one-possession game, suddenly you find yourself down by two scores. Nebraska gets the ball, starts the second half, and the offense just wasn't doing anything last Friday. They just could not get anything going. Some other things that really stood out from this game. Rex Burkhead, Nebraska running back, had 38 carries for 160 yards. 38 carries is a new school record there. And you think about all the great running backs Nebraska's had over the years. The fact that he got more carries in a game than any of them ever did in a game. It says a lot. It says a lot about him. The other thing that stood out to me, too, is Nebraska entered that game with an average time of possession of 27 minutes and I believe 26 seconds. I know it was under 27 and a half minutes, and it was the worst in the Big Ten, among Big Ten teams. It was the worst time of possession average. The Cornhuskers had the ball for over 37 minutes last Friday. Nearly two-thirds of the game. You cannot win a football game when your defense is out on the field for nearly two-thirds of the game, especially when your offense is not getting anything going. It's just not going to happen. You know, Marcus Coker, I thought, okay, he had a decent game. I thought he could have probably been used more there in the first half when the game was so close. He did score the lone touchdown that, you know, salvaged Iowa from being shut out for the first time in 11 years. But, you know, you put that aside for a second. That doesn't take away from just how bad the offense looked. You know, now part of it was Nebraska's defense. It was probably the best the Cornhuskers had played all year. And you had to expect them to come out motivated after giving up 45 points to Michigan the week before. But, you know, James Vandenberg probably had one of his worst games of the season. It was either that one or Penn State. But, you know, it's kind of a toss-up as which game was worse, but either way, he did not have a great game. Marvin McNutt was pretty much shut down. He had four catches for 29 yards, but at one point in the fourth quarter there, he only had two catches for 1 yard. This is the Big Ten receiver of the year that was held to two catches and 1 yard through like three and a half quarters of play. That's pretty mind-boggling. I mentioned McNutt winning that award. He was given that on Monday. And you know what? Hats off to him. He had a phenomenal season. I don't want to take anything away from him because he was the best player on this team this year, without question. And, you know, if you're going to compare him and A.J. Jenkins, McNutt's a better wide receiver. He was. The Big Ten got this right. He deserved that award. Jenkins had more catches, 84 catches to 78, but McNutt averaged more receiving yards per game and had more touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, pretty much every week up until last week during that game against Nebraska, it seemed like every week there he was breaking a new Iowa record or setting a new Iowa record for receiving. And, you know, he's probably the best receiver in school history. I know I've said that on more than one occasion now, and I think the stats, the numbers aren't going to lie here. You know, they back it up completely. McNutt, of course, was also named first team All Big Ten, as was Jenkins. McNutt wasn't the only player to get first team honors. So did Riley Reiff. He was unanimous, just like McNutt was. On the offensive side of the ball. Defensive side of the ball, Sean Prater was recognized as a first-team corner for a second year in a row by the coaches. Not by the media, but by the coaches. So the media had him as honorable mention. The second-team guys, there were three that were voted on by the coaches, Marcus Coker, Adam Geddes, and Mike Daniels. The media recognized Broderick Binns and Micah Hyde as second team All Big Ten. And then there were a whole slew of guys that got honorable mention. So hats off to those guys getting those honors. Now it's a waiting game for Iowa. They're 7-5 for the second year in a row. In the regular season, they finished 7-5. Obviously, they beat Missouri in the Insight Bowl last year to finish 8-5, but they're 7-5 entering a bowl game for a second year in a row, 4-4 in Big Ten play. They finished fourth in the Legends division behind Michigan State, who went 7-1, won it outright, and the Spartans are playing Wisconsin Saturday in the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. As far as Iowa's bowl outlook is concerned, there's basically four bowls that are in play. You have the Insight Bowl, which is December 30th down in Tempe, Arizona. Of course, this is the game Iowa was in last year, as I just mentioned. The Gator Bowl, which is January 2nd down in Jacksonville. The Mike Carcare Bowl of Texas, which is on New Year's Eve down in Houston. And the Ticket City Bowl, which is on January 2nd down in Dallas. Those are the four in play. Two questions need to be answered before we can establish where Iowa's going to end up. And we're not going to know the answers to these until Sunday when all the announcements are made. The first is, will Michigan end up in a BCS game? Currently, the Wolverines are 16th in the BCS standings. They have a good chance of moving up into the top 14, which is where they need to be in order to get consideration. Among the teams directly in front of them are Georgia, who plays LSU in the SEC title game, and both Wisconsin and Michigan State, and somebody has to lose that game. So there's a good chance the Wolverines could move up. If they don't, then the Ticket City Bowl is in play for Iowa. I'm not saying that that's where they'll end up. I'm just saying that that game would be in play for Iowa if Michigan's not a BCS team. If they are, you can eliminate that bowl game, and it's down to three. Now, the Gator Bowl has come out and said point blank that if they can get Ohio State, Florida, that's the matchup they want, and that's what they're gonna choose. So I would say that Iowa's odds of playing in the Gator Bowl are very slim at this point. It's not 0%, because this leads to the second question that needs to be addressed. Penn State. They're gonna be there if Michigan does go to a BCS game. Penn State's going to be there for the Insight Bowl, and normal circumstances, they would be the clear-cut team for the Insight Bowl because they're 9-3. Iowa's the next closest team at 7-5, and every other bowl team, Big Ten team in consideration after Penn State beat head-to-head this season. But obviously, you have the whole scandal that's basically destroyed that program over the past few weeks. But, you know, that is going to be a huge question for the Insight Bowl. Do they want Penn State? Do they want to take that risk? Even though Penn State might be the most deserving team on the field of being in that game, do you want those storylines combined with all the storylines with the Fiesta Bowl, which operates the Insight Bowl? If not, then Iowa could end up in that game for the second year in a row. And if they do, you're looking at a Big 12 team, probably whoever wins a game Saturday between Texas and Baylor. Ohio State could be considered for that game, and if they end up going to the Insight Bowl, that's where Iowa could be in the Gator Bowl. That's the reason why I wouldn't completely rule out the Gator yet. But for all intents and purposes, if Michigan goes to a BCS game, it comes down to Insight and the Mike Carcare Bowl and whether the Insight wants to take Penn State or not. If they don't want to take Penn State, they'll probably take Iowa for the second year in a row. If they do take Penn State, then Iowa's going to end up in Houston, likely against Texas A&M. just looking at the Big 12 standings and how their bowl order shakes out, A&M's still going to be there for that game. And with it being in Houston, I just don't see them passing up on Texas A&M in that situation, especially considering that this is A&M's last year in the Big 12, and starting next year, they're not going to have a shot at getting A&M in a bowl game as long as the tie-ins are between the Big 10 and Big 12. So that's another thing that you really got to factor into the equation. It's basically down to those four games, and like I said, it's a wait-and-see thing. We'll know a lot more Saturday night, and then, of course, the official announcement comes Sunday. Iowa's already sent out a release saying that Kirk Ferentz and Gary Barta will meet Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Central to discuss Iowa's bowl destination. This podcast is kind of long this week, but I think you're going to be very entertained by it. Only one segment here. It's with myself and former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell, who's thankfully been a guest every week on the podcast this year. We discuss a lot from Iowa's game last week against Nebraska to some of the other storylines going on in the Big Ten right now, including the championship game and the bowl, and this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, which you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to submit your picks if you want to this week. When you are on the homepage, just hover over 24 Heisman Road. You'll see the Pick'em page. Click on that. List of 10 games is there. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with your Wisconsin-Michigan State prediction for that Big Ten championship game. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers, much like we do for any Iowa games that we have on the Pick'ems every week. I want to congratulate Larry McGranahan of Iowa City for winning last week's Pick'em. And when we come back, my segment with Chris Rowell, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively at HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Once again, I'm pleased to be joined, as I have been all season long, by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, I guess just to start off with discussion of what happened there last Friday in Lincoln, I don't know what you were thinking, but that, especially the first half of that game, it just kind of seemed really boring to watch almost. It just, like, went by really quick, but it was kind of a very low-scoring game, teams exchanging punts, and then all of a sudden Nebraska got the momentum going. It just seemed like Iowa could never really recover.
Well, looking at the game in the first half, I feel the same way you feel, that the game was kind of boring, and I thought that this game was in the favor of Iowa pretty much, where if you got a team like Iowa struggling, stumbling in this game, losing 2 out of 3, and you will see a team with Iowa come on strong in the second half, try to put an A game together here in the second half. I just felt that the game just got out of hand, but at the same time, it's just one of those games where me and you can look at it as like, hey, this looked like a beatdown on the field that we didn't see in the score or in the stats also.
Well, and I guess the one thing I want to get your thoughts on is just where do you feel, if there is going to be blame somewhere for a game like this, where would you ultimately place it? Because and I know Ferentz said last week, okay, if they lose Friday, they're not going to blame it. They're not going to make the excuse of the short week. And he's got a fair point, because they had a game against Penn State where they looked fairly similar, and they had 2 weeks to prepare for that one. But when you see a game like that where the offense really can't get anything going and the defense is just getting gassed like that, where do you ultimately see – what do you see being most responsible for what occurred?
I would say the most responsible thing is Carl Pelini's his defense had really shown up. They pretty much canceled out Marvin McNutt this week, and after that, you know, they stopped the run. And when you can't get your two best players going, it's kind of hard, period, to get the team going on offense. With the defense, I thought they played tough throughout the game, but not tough enough to be able to hold the withstand what Nebraska was doing on offense. But you can't really blame anybody. It was just the team just couldn't really get anything done. And like I said, if you're going to blame anything, you got to blame Nebraska playing some really good defense there, especially starting with out on Marvin McNutt, then going to the run game where Devontae David pretty much shut down our tight ends and shut down anything that came his way.
Yeah, he actually, I believe he was named Defensive Player of the Week in the Big Ten. as you said, he had a really good game. The one player that really kind of stood out to me, though, for Nebraska was Rex Burkhead. He ended up setting a school record of 38 carries. The last carry, a little controversial. That was a situation where they could have taken a knee, but Martinez handed it off to him, and he took the knee instead. But nevertheless, he had 38 carries for 160 yards. At one point in this game, he had more carries than Iowa ran plays. And I think you're the one that mentioned that on Twitter during the game Friday. But when you see a running back have that type of performance against a defense, what does that do to a defense? Because I would have it was one of those things that just seemed like Nebraska, they dominated the time of possession as well.
They did. I was getting ready to say, when you got a guy that's carrying the ball 38 times, that pretty much says a couple of things. One, that you're trying to get out of the game. Two, that you're having a good game and you're just feeding your running back more and more. Or three, it's just one of those deals where, like Iowa had in the in 2004 season, when you had to run the ball to be honest or whatnot with the pass, excuse me. But Nebraska didn't really have to throw the ball at all because Burkhead and Martinez pretty much had their way throughout the game. It's just one of those deals where Burkhead, he played his butt off this past weekend on Friday, and he pretty much gave it to us. And like you said, with the 38 carries, man, you don't really see many guys with 38 carries unless that's all you have on offense, which Nebraska, they do have that. Taylor Martinez, and they have a freshman receiver that is pretty decent.
But it's interesting you bring up the passing game, too, because, yeah, Nebraska didn't have to rely on it too much, but there's actually a point late in the fourth quarter. Now, Vandenberg did finish with more passing yards eventually, but there's a point in the fourth quarter where Taylor Martinez, who's not really known for being a good passer, let alone a guy that is going to beat you with his arm, he had more passing yards than James Vandenberg did. And I know after the game, that was one issue that I think you could tell Ferentz is clearly disappointed, and it was just how ineffective the passing game looked, because it seemed like Marcus Coker, he was effective early on, but they were never really in a position where they could truly get him going because the passing game wasn't there. And as a result, you see Nebraska loading the box, trying to stop him.
I was going to say our passing game, like I said, with Marvin McNutt being shut down, Keenan caught a couple grabs, and then we looked towards our tight end where Levante David, like I said, had a ridiculous game. He shut down our tight ends, and it was kind of hard because we actually went after Nebraska's best players, their cornerback and their linebacker. And when you go after someone's best player and you are attacking them well and you're seeing success, you continue to go after them. And we kept attacking them, and we weren't having any success. And that was one thing I was saying to myself, like, okay, sure, Keenan's on the other side, or either KMM was on in the middle somewhere. What's going on? You know, but the defense pretty much stopped everything. So I can't say you can't blame James not being able to be effective or anything, but it's just one of those deals. Some of those passes was overthrown, like you said, and some of them were in these guys' hands. You know, Marvin dropped a couple. Brad had a couple. He made a good catch, but I mean, it's just one of those deals where you're scratching your head throughout the game.
Yeah, and I don't want to completely rail on him here, but the one interception that he threw, that was terrible. I mean, that was one of those plays that is you're seeing him running out of the pocket, and you're thinking, okay, he's going to just throw it away. But then you see him throw it downfield like he did. That's a mistake that you normally see younger quarterbacks make. That's not something that you see a guy like Vandenberg, who started 12 games this season, making.
Right. I was getting ready to say, when you got a guy that started 12 games, and also we sit here and harp on guys being younger guys or whatnot, or either talk about guys that has been behind a guy like a Ricky Stanzi or whatnot throughout his career and being able to get his chance. Yes, he had a couple games a couple years ago, and now this year he's the starter. He's still gonna make mistakes no matter what. But at the same time, though, James had, like you said, 12 games to be able to sit here and be like, oh, that's a no-no. We don't do those type of passes. And one thing that we've seen James is he's matured throughout the season, but then he's very inconsistent, as we see. It's one of those deals where maybe did he rely on Marvin too much this past game and say, hey, if we can't get Marvin going, we can't get anything going. So it's just one of those deals that we will see a better team in the bowl game. We have a month to sit here and reevaluate some things with James, and I'm sure he's going to see a lot of film to sit here and be like, okay, let's get ready for this game and the season going forward.
Do you see that as a fair criticism then of him? Just you mentioned him keying on McNutt, and I know I've heard other people make that comment, and I've kind of noticed that at times as well. Do you think that that's kind of what was taking place there Friday?
Yeah, I think he keyed on McNutt a little bit too much. It's just one of those deals where you got a guy to make plays for you when you need help. That's who you lean on to, and it's always great to have a first-year quarterback being able to have a guy to rely on. Usually it's a tight end that you rely on with a Tony Moyaki and Scott Chandler in the past and or either Brandon Myers. But James had a receiver, and his tight ends were younger guys that some guys didn't have as much experience except for Brad Herman, which he should have stepped up this year. I think he didn't really fill the role that we were looking for him to fill this year, but at the same time, he came through with a couple catches. You can't sit there and criticize our tight ends. They're younger guys, some guys with not a lot of experience compared to the past. So, yeah, keying on McNutt was huge this year, but he made the plays when you needed him. So you can't really sit there and say, hey.
Well, and just kind of going back to the defense here for a second, I know you made the comment that you thought they played tough, but, again, Nebraska is one of those things they had a time of possession. And I know Ferentz stopped short of saying that this is a turning point, but he basically said this was a turning point, and I do agree with him on this, that the end of the first half there, Nebraska put together, I believe it was a 15-play drive of 80 yards, and the big play on that drive was a pass interference that was called on Bernstein, which I'll just make this comment. If anybody else is back there throwing the ball, I could see that being a good penalty to take because he would have got burned, but with Martinez throwing it, it seemed like he underthrew it just a little bit. I don't think Bernstein probably would have got beat by the receiver, but I don't think it would have been a touchdown on that play. But nevertheless, that play set up what ended up being a real effective drive for Nebraska. They ran the ball at will, and then eventually they got to the goal line. They did play action. Martinez threw the touchdown pass in the final minute to make it 10-0. How much of a deflating – I'm trying to think of the right word here – how much does that hurt a team's confidence, especially a defensive player's confidence, when you see a team moving the ball like that and getting a big momentum shift in its favor right before halftime?
I was going to say, like you said, the penalty was huge, without a doubt. And when a team got a 15-play drive, yeah. When you got guys, it's pretty much just sitting there just saying, hey, you punched me in my mouth 15 times, and you think that's not going to hurt. It'll deflate pretty much the team. And it's one of those deals where it's just like play after play after play, and then boom, touchdown right at the end of the half. And it's just one of those deals where you sit there and be like, gosh, we didn't have a chance to sit there and regroup. But after that, you know, after the drive, we went in the halftime. But I still figure that drive pretty much deflated a lot, and I mean huge, big time.
It's one of those things I noticed, too, with actually really all their scoring drives is, and this is where it was kind of similar to the Penn State game. It wasn't so much, you know, the defense playing bad as it was, okay, when Nebraska was executing, just like when Penn State was executing in that game, they were putting together really long drives of 80, 85, 90 yards and just wearing them down to the point where in the fourth quarter they're gassed.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say it's one of those deals when you got teams sitting there putting down big drives, it's kind of hard to sit there and look up and say, okay, our offense, get on the field, score some points, get a drive going. And next thing you know, like you say, if you got drives like that going, the offensive lineman sitting there pushing the defensive lineman, defensive backs running around, linebackers chasing, hitting, all that stuff, it comes to a point where you say, hey, man, this is a lot of banging I'm doing right now. Can I get a breather? And when your team going three and out, it's not helping your defense being able to get any adjustments on the sideline. It's more of us going on a go, trying to figure out how can we stop this offense.
Well, Nebraska ended up winning the game. The final was 20-7. Iowa, as a result, finished 7-5 for the second year in a row. You see that kind of result, especially given that your senior year, you guys went to the Orange Bowl and you won that game and finished 11-2. To see this team go back to that point where, okay, having 7-5, or I guess 8-5 was the record last year because they won the Insight Bowl, but having those kinds of seasons again, what's going through your mind as a former player? You just see that, okay, they took that kind of a step back. What do you ultimately attribute that to?
Well, I don't – it's kind of hard to sit here and talk about compare this team this year compared to last year, because last year you talking about a big letdown from a lot of fans' perspectives. You go from an Orange Bowl, like you say, to an Insight Bowl when you have majority of your starters and a lot of experienced guys coming back. So comparing this year to last year is kind of, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but kind of unfair in a way, because you had a couple guys that were very experienced, especially a lot of seniors, compared to this year where you had a lot of guys that played here and there, not a lot of experience compared to the year before. 7-5, 8-5 at the end of the year would be a pretty solid year. Sometimes fans get into it a little too much. They don't know what's going on, as I would say. But at the same time, it's just one of those deals. Yes, you would like to see another win. You're going in, 8-4, I think, 8-4 or whatever. And it's some people forgets that teams get better throughout the year. Iowa State beat us. Is Iowa State better than us? We don't know. You know, they beat Oklahoma State. They got a big game out of that, and they started off the season pretty hot. And then you sit here and a lot of people say, oh, Penn State is not a good team in the beginning of the season. Throughout the year, I would say Penn State was a really good team. It's just the end of the year they unraveled because of the things that were going on in the program. But you look at some of these losses and look at some of these wins, you say, hey, this is a pretty solid year. I mean, we overachieved in some of those games. We didn't play well in a lot of games. Let's not forget that last year in the – I know I'm going on a rant or whatnot. But we look at last year, we barely beat Indiana. Look at this year, we barely beat Pittsburgh. So that game could have went – both of those games could have went either way. So it's just one of those deals with expectations. It just depends on who expectations are higher or whatnot and who's lower throughout that year. But with Coach Ferentz, you know what type of team he's getting back, and some fans and reporters also do too. It's just sometimes people just say, hey, I didn't spend all this money and get too much emotionally involved.
And I just to clarify, I agree with you. I think that there is a difference between last year and this year. And I think this year most people that were pretty at least level-headed and realistic saw this kind of season taking place, you know, where they go 7-5, 8-4, maybe 9-3. And, you know, they could have very easily gone 9-3. I think what a lot of it stems from, just looking back on it now, I think the two losses to Iowa State and Minnesota really just upset a lot of people, because those were games where, as opposed to just getting thoroughly beat like they did the other three games, they expect to beat those teams, and you see just some of the same mistakes that you noticed last year that were being made in the games they lost. They were appearing again, whether it was not prepared, knowing an onside kick was coming, or playing for overtime, or just, you know, whatever.
I was getting ready to say, on top of all that, it's just like you say, with expectations, you got different people with different expectations. But with the Minnesota game, like you said, and the Iowa State game, we expect to win those games. But at the same time, who expected Marcus Coker to actually lead the league in rushing or whatnot? It was some people that actually thought about that, but it's just one of those deals. We knew that we knew who Marvin McNutt was. We knew James would be able to throw the ball. Marcus would be able to run the ball. But some of these people that I've seen in the preseason say, hey, Marcus Coker is going to be a pretty good guy. He's going to lead the league just because I was going to rely on their run to play action to get to Marvin McNutt this year and Keenan Davis. But it's just one of those deals where I've seen a lot of progress, and I've seen a lot of in some regress. I wouldn't say a lot of regress. I just felt that our defense wasn't strong as it has been in the past, and it's a lot of people that sit there and wouldn't believe. It's like, oh, I will always have a strong defense. It's years where you have a tough outing or whatnot, and we're blessed to have a passing game, and I don't see anything should change with our offense. Maybe a couple of wrinkles here and there, but I mean, a lot of people sit here and say, hey, let's get rid of Coach O'Keefe and all this stuff, but he put up more points this year on average than he has in the past with better players on offense. So it's just one of those deals where we can scratch our heads on and sit there and talk about for a whole month. Right.
And we'll probably do that on the next podcast. But a few other items I just want to touch base with you on here before we get into the pick 'em. This week they announced the All Big Ten. And we mentioned Marvin McNutt. He was named the Big Ten Receiver of the Year. He won that award. He and Riley Reiff were both named first team by both the coaches and media. Sean Prater was named first team by the coaches. Just your thoughts on those three guys in particular receiving those honors?
All three of those guys are pretty much some guys that's been in the program for 4 years. Riley Reiff, he's a redshirt junior, which a lot of people are looking for him coming back next year. Outstanding guy. Marvin McNutt, can't say much more about Marvin McNutt. He pretty much explains himself, and Sean had a really good career here. A lot of people expected him to play a little bit better, but when you got a guy like him, had established himself and or whatnot, it's just one of those deals where Sean did everything he can. A lot of people didn't really have to pass the ball this year. And when they did, some people say Sean didn't play as hard as he would or whatnot. You just never know. Year to year is completely different. And you have Micah Hyde on the other end. So it's just one of those deals where, I mean, a lot of people is like, hey, Iowa got some experienced guys out there. So we did see people attack us when B.J. Lawley came out there. So it's one of those deals. Those guys, they earned it. They earned it. They had a pretty good year. Like I said, I expected a little bit more out of Sean. But, I mean, Riley Reiff is one of the top tackles. Right. Marvin is one of the better receivers. But I think Marvin won the receiver, outstanding receiver award because how consistent play right. he had. Jenkins in Illinois had a really good season. I mean, just ridiculous season. But Marvin was more of a guy consistent, bringing everything he had, bringing his lunchbox pretty much to the stadium, as they would say in Virginia Tech. So take my hats off to the guys.
And he also wasn't on a team that started 6-0 and then lost six straight games. But a couple quick follow-ups going off of some comments you made there just now. You mentioned, first of all, Riley Reiff, and you said people might be looking forward to him being back for a senior. Do you think he could be back next year? Or because a lot of people are saying, okay, this is a guy that if he were to go to the NFL right now, he could be a first-round pick, kind of like Brian Bulaga was a couple years ago.
Yeah, this guy is just like a lot of guys on our program that goes back and forth. He's one of those guys, very athletic. I would say he's a little bit more athletic than Bulaga just because he played defensive line and he moves pretty good. I think Bulaga was just an offensive lineman, just period. You know, he's just a really good thoroughbred. But Riley Reiff is very athletic, very active. He's a leader. It's just one of those deals where if you see a guy coming back on offensive line, if you had to sit there and say Bulaga or Reiff come back, it would be hands down Reiff because he's one of those guys, he enjoys being at the university. You don't see no signs of him saying, oh, I'm NFL bound and all this stuff. He's one of those guys, level headed, like I have a good time. And him and James Ferentz hang around each other and all the other offensive linemen and Marcus Zusevic. So it's just, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Sure, he's first-round draft pick on other people's, but like a Jake Long and a Joe Thomas right. guy is to stay for his senior year, I can see that happening. Will he be
Robert
Gallery? Will he be a number one overall pick? Maybe not. You never know, but a guy like him can always improve. Will he have a better year next year? We don't know. It's just one of those deals. When you have a lineman who stays in a program like this, they say, okay, this guy is a guy that's been in a program 4 or 5 years and know what he's doing. He's a first-round draft pick without a doubt. So I think he will get a great amount of looks and a lot of people with peer pressure here in the offseason.
And in hindsight, I would probably say now that Bulaga ended up making a pretty good decision, considering even though he fell lower than people thought he would get drafted. He ended up in a good situation there in Green Bay, winning a Super Bowl last year as a rookie and being a starting, I believe, at right tackle for him. The other follow-up I had, though, to what you were saying was regard to Prater, because unlike McNutt and Reif, he wasn't unanimous. It was the coaches that elected him first team. In the media, he was honorable mention. And you had just made a comment here that you thought maybe he could have played a little bit better. What do you think maybe the coaches see in Prater that allowed him to be recognized by them in such a high regard that maybe others, like in the media or just in general, don't notice?
I was going to say, a lot is respect for a guy, you know, where you have a respect for a guy, sit there and be like, okay, we can sit here and talk about other guys that's been first team that hasn't really had the stats that he had the year before and so on. It's just one of those deals where you have guys out of the woodworks that makes the first team that you had a guy that's been outstanding three years, and his senior year he falls off and still gets the first team. It's just one of those deals. I thought Sean played well, but it's times where I thought he played off a little off too much, giving opposing receivers a little too much respect. I was thinking Sean would play a lot of man-to-man, head-to-head, sitting here and say it's his senior year, sitting here and solidify himself, getting ready for the next level. That's what I expected out of him, to play a little bit more physical and being able to sit there and say, hey, I am the alpha dog of defensive backs with Denard coming into with Nebraska into the Big Ten. I just felt that he could have played a little harder, but then he probably had some nicks here throughout the season. So it's just one of those deals that, you know, the media goes upon what they see throughout the year, I think, for the most part, and like, okay, they go off the guys that play well.
And I think that's a fair assessment, because that is something that I didn't obviously get a chance to vote in this for whatever reason. The Big Ten, if you want to send me a ballot, that'd be great. But I'll just make a quick comment on that. I think part of it, from my perspective, I could say that it is something that you want to do, is you want to evaluate from start to finish, and you want to be fair in those evaluations. And yeah, obviously we don't get a chance to see what goes on in practice every day, but from what you see on the field in games, I think that's, you want to make the right evaluations or something like that. But
right, I was getting ready to say, to give the name of the award that they gave Sean is a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that. It's just one of those deals where you sit there and be like, okay, the guy's been stellar throughout his career. Okay, there it is. Just like I was.
I don't think he got a Lifetime Achievement. He was just
saying, we would call it a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that, saying, okay, this guy's been stellar throughout his career, whatnot. He had a pretty decent season if you look at some stats or whatnot. I thought James played well. He had some strong – I know I'm going off the off subject, but I thought James played well. I thought, of course, Russell out in Wisconsin, and then you got Kirk Cousins, and you had Denard, and you had James that was in the mix too. And I was just like, okay, James should be getting some highly consideration, but I mean, when you appearing and disappearing throughout the season, that's what happens. And I felt the same way with Coker. I mean, he could have pushed hard against Rex Burkhead, but the way Rex Burkhead pretty much
I think he solidified himself. And it's hard to, when you have him and Monty Ball both, and Monty Ball's having a ridiculous season for Wisconsin, but I'll segue to a couple other topics in the Big Ten, then we'll get into bowl stuff and then the pick 'em. Sorry, this is a little longer, but it's the end of the season, so there's a lot to discuss. A couple of coaching changes going on here in the Big Ten. One that has gone down, and it was something that you informed me was probably going to be happening for a while now. I got to give you credit on this. Ohio State did end up getting Urban Meyer as its head coach. It doesn't sound like he's going to coach in the bowl game wherever they end up going, but him taking over next year, and it sounds like he's going to keep Luke Fickell on board as an assistant. Your thoughts on him becoming Ohio State's coach and what type of impact he's going to have on that program and on the Big Ten going forward?
What I thought it was a really good hire, first off. The hire doesn't just – it's not just – the actual head coach. It's the assistant coaches, who he brings on. With Luke Finkel staying on staff, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? We never know until this year, next year unravels and see how things go. But I think what's keeping Luke Finkel probably is a good thing for the players, actually, because he knows the players or whatnot, and, you know, he has his guys where he will say, hey, Urban, this guy is a hard worker and so on, or either just say he has the inside scoop to help Urban Meyer. Will this be will his success happen in the first year? Maybe not. I really feel that he'll have a pretty good year where he's getting on the ground running. But I also feel that Urban Meyer just need to put in staff – a really good staff, and I heard a lot from Clemson's offensive coordinator, where I thought he did a really good job, especially being in the season, having that really good receiver they have and quarterback. But I thought it was a really good hire, and Urban's got a lot to do. I mean, it's going to be a lot of expectations really fast, and it's just one of those deals. I think the expectations here at the University of Ohio State will be higher than it is at Florida, just because he's a hometown guy. So take my hats off to him. It's going to be a rough job. I'm going to say that now.
And the other one, and I know Penn State obviously is going to be looking for a new coach here too, but they haven't really done anything yet, so we'll hold off on that. But Illinois, after starting 6-0 and then losing six straight games, which I'm pretty sure is unprecedented, they did finally let go of Ron Zook over the weekend, and they ended the season with an embarrassing 20-point loss to Minnesota. If you're in Illinois' shoes for a second here, just what type of coach are you going to be pursuing? What are you going to be looking for as far as somebody that can maybe fit that program and get them back into a position where they could maybe compete?
I was going to say, looking at Illinois over the past years, I haven't really seen them a lot in the eye. So I would go back to a spread offense, something similar to what Zook had and the coach that they had before Zook. I just feel that Illinois, they have a bright spot in the quarterback, of course. And everything else, I'm not sure. I haven't seen a lot of Illinois this year. But I think they should go after someone that's probably familiar to the system, I mean, to the university. But for the most part, I doubt if they do that. I think they're going to hire someone that's pretty good and that knows the Big Ten. And usually Illinois get guys – from the Big Ten, and that's one of their deals. But Illinois should be able to pick someone up pretty good.
And for what it's worth, their AD that they just hired came from Cincinnati, and while he was there, he did get Brian Kelly to come from Central Michigan. He was at Cincinnati. He got them to a couple BCS games before going to Notre Dame, and then later on he hired Butch Jones, and now they're in a position again where they could possibly be playing in the BCS. But just now looking ahead here to – this week. First, I'll get your initial thoughts. We'll save the picks for the end here, but you see Wisconsin play Michigan State. I think this is a game that we both kind of saw evolving over time here. And, I mean, they played a great game back in October. Michigan State won on the final play. You see this matchup happening again this Saturday in Indianapolis. What are your thoughts? And I'm not going to ask, obviously, how you see it playing out just yet, but how do you see this matchup looking? Like, what are the things that just kind of stand out to you about both of these teams?
The first thought I was going to say is a chess game. And this is going to be a big-time chess game. I really feel like anyone else feel that the way that Wisconsin has really recovered after the two heartbreaking losses, they played really well, starting out with their quarterback and their running back, Monty Ball and Russell Wilson. Michigan State has been a team that's been under the radar, pretty much, where they clinched and they're pretty much sitting back like fat cats. And maybe it's just one of those deals that D'Antonio is pretty much probably sitting there like, okay, we're going to get these guys for a second time this second time around. But my first thoughts is just this is going to be a heck of a game. And this is going to be well played.
And now just going back to Iowa here, a couple more things on them, and then we'll get into pick 'em. With this week, they obviously aren't going to know where their bowl destination is until Sunday. But you're in the position of going back to your days as a player. in this time leading up to finding out what bowl game you're going to, how is this week spent coming off of Thanksgiving, coming off Thanksgiving break, and getting back into the routine? What are the things that you're really focusing on this week? What are the things that you're doing to make yourself a better player?
It's kind of hard. Just like you said, in the past, we're used to having a break. These guys got ready for a game, prepared for a game against Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Well, what I say is usually this week would be a week where you get a little practice in, you get a little weightlifting in, you catch up with some homework or some projects that you got due coming here pretty soon going into finals. And also it's a time where downtime for football slash it's just one of those deals. You're not so much into football. It's more weightlifting. You're trying to get back into your school so you can finish off strong mm-hmm. in class where you have enough time for football. It's just one of those deals you focus on Iowa versus Iowa when you step on the field and weight room, you get stronger and younger guys. It's pretty much for younger guys, a lot of development going on. And for the older guys, you're sitting there just saying, hey, man, younger guy, tap me out of here. Get me out of here so I can graduate for the seniors. And the juniors sitting here is just clapping on. The guys sitting there trying to get better. It's just one of those deals where you're just trying to figure out who you are as a player and where you are developmental-wise, and try to prove to the coach you can sit here and play this last game of the season, or you're getting better, putting yourself in a great position for spring ball.
So, in other words, this is almost kind of like a bye week in a sense, or is it different somewhat?
Well, it's completely different from a bye week. It's pretty much you just hitting it hard in all perspectives, if you ask me. You focus on Iowa versus Iowa, yeah, and it's going to be Iowa versus Iowa for a while until coach – well, usually coach put emphasis on a team, and he has some thoughts upon a team, and he they probably have some kind of
game plan. Usually comes after finals, though, right?
Right. And they usually not the game plan, but they have some stuff that they want to see on a weekend, on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday afternoon, where they'll sit here and be like, okay, we play in Texas, South Carolina, or such and such. Let's get some plays that they play that we usually have on our plays. And it's usually they'd be like, okay, make it look like 23B as a last play or whatnot we have on the team. It's just, okay, we got to do it from a spread perspective, an eye perspective, or something else different. So it's just one of those deals you're just trying to focus on Iowa versus Iowa, but at the same time, you're still hitting it hard, getting looks from other teams. So
when you bring up the looks from other teams, just – how many teams in particular do you think they are scouting right now? Because this is a situation where they don't really know where they're going to be going until they know whether or not Michigan ends up in a BCS game. So there's like three or four different possibilities out there. So there's got to be at least three or four different opponents that you could possibly be scheming for right now.
Yeah, that's what the GA's job is and other assistant coaches' jobs. And also, like you say, we find some insights upon things. And if not, like Coach always used to do, it's Iowa versus Iowa. You just always try to better yourself. The better you are preparing yourself with each other, the better you'll be able to perform against another team.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I think I've asked you enough questions on all that stuff. If you're ready for the pick 'em, we'll get right to that. I want to congratulate last week's winner, Larry McGranahan of Iowa City. And again, for those of you who want to participate this week, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to submit your picks. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. The pick 'em page is there. Click on that. List of 10 games. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score this week with the Big Ten Championship game between Wisconsin and Michigan State. We're going to use that in the event of any tiebreakers that may exist. We'll treat that kind of like we do normally with Iowa games. We'll start here with the MAC championship game. And this is interesting to me because, yeah, neither of these teams are ranked, but Ohio and Northern Illinois are both 9-3. Northern Illinois was in this game last year. They lost in the final minutes to Miami of Ohio. And they underwent a whole new coaching change with Jerry Kill going to Minnesota. They brought in the defensive coordinator from Wisconsin. They got right back here again. This is also a team that Iowa opens the season with next year, by the way, in Chicago. But I don't know how much you really know about either team. I'll just be honest and say I don't know a whole lot. But given what is known, how do you see this one playing out in Detroit Friday night?
Well, I was getting ready to say, I know a little bit about Ohio. I had a former teammate play for Ohio that from high school or whatnot, and I've been watching a lot of Frank Solich. And Ohio been on TV a lot, you know.
There's been a lot of MAC games on like Tuesdays and Wednesdays this year.
Right, I was getting ready to say. So we've seen a lot of Ohio, and we've seen quite a bit of Northern, and usually Northern here, if we see it quite a bit, it'd probably interact on Fox or so. From what I've seen with Northern, they have a pretty dynamite receiver, and they play high pace. They like to score a lot of points, but Ohio, they like to ground it out. And I've seen that they have a pretty pretty solid quarterback they have and a pretty good defense. But with this game, I'm going to go with Northern because just their high pace they're high pace on offense. They got their receiver actually plays return, man. He had two return touchdowns back-to-back against Toledo earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. And I think they have enough playmakers to sit there and be able to overcome Ohio's push that they have towards the end of this game. And so I'm going Northern
Illinois. I'm going to agree with you here on Northern Illinois, mainly just because of a couple of the points that I made there a little bit ago. Just the fact that this was a position, I mean, they're familiar with having been in this position last year. I think that that really gives them an advantage because they kind of know what to expect going in, and it's a situation where, okay, it's basically like unfinished business for them, you know, knowing that they came so close to winning the MAC last year, weren't able to. They're now back in this position again. I also just think, too, that they were slightly more impressive this year, just kind of looking at both of the schedules. Ohio, the best team that they probably played outside of its conference this year is Rutgers, and they lost by a lot there. But Northern Illinois played Wisconsin earlier in the year, and I feel like that's a game, even though they got pounded, that you could build off of. And I think that that's something that you see playing in Northern's benefit right now, and I think it'll show on Friday. Now, moving along to the other game Friday night, that is – honestly, this is just embarrassing, but the Pac-12 championship, Oregon, legitimate team. They won the Pac-12 North, finishing 10-2 this year. They will be at home Friday night because they had the better record against a 6-6 UCLA team that really the only reason they're in this game is because USC's on probation. And they just lost 50-0 to USC last weekend. And oh, by the way, Rick Neuheisel got fired, and he's Friday night is the last time he's going to be coaching, regardless of the outcome. Just looking at this, like, this is one of those games. It's like, how does this happen? I mean, I know how it happened, but you're just sitting there like, how does a 6-6 team end up in the conference championship? Because really, UCLA, they're not really that good of a team. Oregon, I believe, is a 31.5-point favorite entering this game, and I think that's a fair spread. It might even be generous. I really think this. I don't know if you remember the game Texas Colorado. Texas won 70-3 in that Big 12 championship. This is a year they won the national championship. They have Vince Young. I could see it being a lot like that, especially because this game is at Outset Stadium. I think Oregon wins. I think they win big. And quite honestly, UCLA, they're not good.
I don't know if UCLA even preparing to play in this game, you ask me. After they got beat down by USC, which I watched majority of that game, I kind of felt bad, especially with Neuheisel actually getting fired before the game. It's just one of those deals.
He got fired. He officially got fired on Monday, I believe. But
it's just one of those deals where you're preparing as a player. Mm-hmm. You're sitting here like, okay, my coach is fired. Where is his motivation? And usually when you get motivation from a team, it's usually from your coach that pretty much prepared his assistant coaches, and his assistant coaches get you prepared for a game. And where's the preparation? You know, how can the players get fired up to play for their coach one last time? And do the players like him also? And do they want to play for him? So it's just one of those deals. If I was on UCLA team, I would not want to be embarrassed two games in a row. And on a good note, Puff Daddy's son committed to UCLA, which I thought was kind of weird because of the Coach
the timing was interesting.
Yeah, the time was really interesting. So what he had got a scholarship from the other coach, we don't know. Or either it's just this guy want to go Hollywood or something like that. But it's just one of those deals where it's tough to be a player there or either a coach knowing it's your last game. For the seniors, you got to play for the seniors. Any other classmen, let's play this one for the guys.
But you see Oregon winning this game, though.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And I would also just point out, too, really for UCLA, this could be Rose Bowl or bust because obviously they win the Pac-12, and they get that bid in the Rose Bowl, but they lose. They're 6-7. They actually would have to file a waiver request through the NCAA just to become bowl eligible again. Because there you can't have a losing record, really. Right. So, yeah, that whole thing is just strange.
Let's not forget, UCLA do have a chance to go to the Rose Bowl. Let's not forget about that part, too.
Boy, that I know they play their home games there, but I would imagine all the Rose Bowl officials are praying like crazy that Oregon wins this game. Moving along now to the Big East, and we're going into the Saturday slate now. This is a game that we're not really sure what's going to be at stake here until we see what happens Thursday night between West Virginia and South Florida. But simply put, Cincinnati's playing at home against UConn. They have a chance to at least clinch a share of the Big East, if not win the Big East bid to play in a BCS game, most likely the Orange Bowl. If West Virginia does lose to South Florida Thursday night, then Cincinnati, a win here, would win the Big East for them. If they lose this game to UConn, then Louisville goes because they have the head-to-head on West Virginia. UConn's a team that they are coming off a win over Rutgers, rather convincing win over Rutgers, but they're still 5-6, needing another win for bowl eligibility here. Cincinnati obviously playing for a conference championship. Interestingly enough, these are the last three, really, Big East champs because Cincinnati went to two straight BCS games and UConn went to Fiesta Bowl last year. I'll ask you because obviously you have some connections to the Big East here. How do you see this one shaking out Saturday?
I was going to say, I see Cincinnati winning this game, first off. The reason why I say is because Cincinnati coach has those guys well prepared to play this game, especially now that this backup quarterback is able to sit here and get a couple games under his belt. It's kind of weird to see that UConn actually won a very convincing game against Rutgers last week. So the motivation is going to be there for them to win number six and get into being eligible to get into a bowl game. So you're going to see a pretty tough fought game, but I really feel that Cincinnati is going to pull away in the second half.
I agree with you on that. And I think, too, even though you mentioned the backup quarterback situation, Caleros got hurt against West Virginia. This is a situation that I think the fact that they won last week at Syracuse is obviously big because it keeps them alive here in the thick of things. But going back to knowing what's at stake, I have a hard time seeing Cincinnati losing at home in this circumstance too, especially against a UConn team that is kind of middle of the road now after losing Randy Edsall.
I was getting ready to say if Caleros doesn't get hurt,
there's no doubt they probably would have already won the conference.
Right. I was getting ready to say they probably would have won the conference.
And moving along here, we have the Conference USA Championship game, which actually features two ranked teams. Southern Miss, 10-2. They're ranked 24th in the country. They're going to Houston. Houston won last week over Tulsa. They're 12-0 at the moment. They're at home for this game. This game is being played at Houston Stadium. They win this game. It's pretty much a lock that they'll play in the in a BCS game, most likely the Sugar Bowl if they win. Obviously, they have a lot going for them here, home field. Case Keenum continuing to light it up. Southern Miss has had a pretty decent season with Larry Fedora at the helm there this year. But they also have a couple of losses that leave you scratching your head a bit. And while I don't know how legit a team Houston's going to end up being in the BCS, but I have a hard time seeing them losing this game at home. I think they win. I think you're going to see them play in a big-time bowl game, like I said, most likely the Sugar Bowl, given the projections that are out there. And you know, that's going to be the topic of discussion here for the next month, is just how good is this team actually, because they are one of only two undefeateds at the moment, but the non-conference schedule, it's really kind of one of those situations where, okay, they played with the cards that they've been dealt, and they've proven that, you know, they're a legit team in that regard. They've won every game on their schedule, but people are still going to be wondering, okay, how good is this team really? But as far as this game goes, I don't see Houston losing, especially with this game being at home.
I agree. I'm going to go with Houston also. But Southern Miss has had a really good season. Like you say, until you scratch your head, it's two losses. It's just one of those deals where, like you say, Houston has passed every test that has been in front of them until this game right now that's coming up this week. It's just one of those deals where you got to let your fine quarterback, where Case Keenan is just unreal this year, where last year he's injured and everything. The season was kind of whatever. It's hard to get away from it. Like you say, we just don't know what type of team Houston is. We've seen Tulsa jump on them. Their biggest test was a team we just got pretty much done talking about two games ago with UCLA and the opener. That's what a lot of people said. If they get past UCLA, their season is pretty much stacked, and here's reality. So I'm going to go with Houston because they got a really good quarterback and some pretty solid receivers.
Yeah, and we should mention Patrick Edwards is a really good wide receiver this year if you see the stats. But I think, too and I'll just say this as well. I have no problem with them being in a BCS game if they do go undefeated, because, like I said before, it's one of those things where they've been dealt their schedule. They handled every test, like you said. And it's not like we haven't seen this over the past few years. You see Boise State go undefeated playing in games, TCU, Utah, Hawaii. The one year they went undefeated, they went to the Sugar Bowl, lost to Georgia. So, I mean, it's one of those things. I don't have a problem seeing those teams in these games. It's just a matter of, okay, at what point are you going out there? Are you really getting tested? Like, because you see Boise State, one of the reasons that people always view them as legit is, okay, they're always getting at least one major non-conference game every year. Like, this year they played Georgia. Last year they played Virginia Tech.
I was going to say they played another tough team Boise State had played, but it's just one of those deals with these teams that they know they're coming off with a pretty solid season. I mean, not season, but a pretty solid team coming up the next year or so. Can you get a marquee game for yourself to sit here and say we're legit? Did Houston know that they were going to be undefeated or anything like this? Probably not. With teams that are like that, I would say if anybody in the inside is like, hey, let's figure out if this team can play against another solid team, knowing that you're going to have a pretty good season here coming up. Look at the TCU's been doing it, and also Boise State's, like you said. It's just hard sometimes to sit there and manage a schedule, and then you're seeing a team just come out of nowhere and just go undefeated, and people are like, well, we don't know this team. And usually it's teams from the West or the South that we've never seen in the Midwest.
Moving along here, and as a result of the Big 12 dropping down to 10 teams, they actually have three regular season games here this weekend instead of a championship, obviously. One of them features Iowa State going down to Manhattan to take on K-State, who has a chance still at a share of the Big 12. They can't win the Big 12's bid to the Fiesta Bowl. That's going to come down to who wins the Bedlam game, which we'll get to later, but Kansas State has a chance to at least get a share of the Big 12 title. Iowa State, they're 6-5. They're going to a bowl game. If they win this game, it could end up being a really good bowl game the Cyclones end up in. This is a game that the last few years this was played at Arrowhead Stadium, and if it was like that again this year, I would give Iowa State a better chance. But the fact that this is in Manhattan, I have a hard time seeing them going on the road and winning this game. I know they got a solid win over Oklahoma State 2 weeks ago at home, and they hung in there with OU for a while before Oklahoma pulled away. And I'm not saying that they won't play Kansas State close, but it's just a game that Kansas State is clearly a better team. And with this game being there, I have a hard time seeing them losing at home. And, again, knowing it's going back to what's at stake. And K-State understands that they win this game, even though they're not going to Fiesta Bowl, they're going to still go to a decent bowl game.
I was getting ready to say, you got to take your hats off to Paul Rose and what he's doing this year. Some of the losses, you sit there and scratch your head and probably go drain a couple cold ones here or whatnot and try to get throughout that day or so, that weekend. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those deals that the games he won and the games that he actually did fairly good and lost still, like an Oklahoma game, you sit there and be like, okay, this program is moving forward. He got his guys that he want is, you know, 3 years, 4 years going in here pretty soon. But Kansas State has a very firm ground of what they're doing this year, and they had a really good season. This quarterback they have is dynamite. The seniors going out. And it's hard to let those seniors leave without a really good co-championship next to their school's name. And that would be really good for them, because we've seen them go up and down throughout the last couple of years. The last time we seen Kansas State do anything, L. Roberson was at helm, and Darren Sproles, which were some pretty good years.
Josh Freeman, too, at one point.
Josh Freeman.
Yeah, they weren't as good a team, but he obviously was a first-round pick.
Yeah, he was a first-round pick, and no one's seen that one outside of pro scouts and their actual – head coach, who pretty much came from the Broncos there. But it's just one of those deals where Kansas State has something to be proud about throughout the year, especially if they win.
Then staying in the Big 12 here, another game that could actually end up being critical as far as the BCS is concerned. That's a topic for another day, though. Baylor is ranked 19th, 8-3, coming off a win over Texas Tech. They're playing at home against the Texas team that won in the final seconds to beat A&M last week on Thanksgiving. I think it's safe to say the winner of this game probably has a good shot at playing in the Insight Bowl, maybe even the Alamo Bowl, depending on what happens in the Big 12. This is a game that I feel, if you're going to discuss a Heisman, I would wait until this game's over before you make any final decisions, because Robert Griffin III, it sounds like he is going to play. He looked like he suffered a head injury he did suffer a head injury against Texas Tech, possible concussion, but it sounds like he's going to give it a go Saturday against Texas. And, you know, he's had an amazing season, and if he puts up the gaudy numbers like he did earlier this year on this Texas defense, then I think he's at the very least top three finalists for the Heisman. As far as this game goes, I give the slight edge to Baylor, not just because they're at home, but I think, too, with Robert Griffin in the mix, they're just simply a better team. And I think that they have the confidence going right now, you know, beating a team like Oklahoma 2 weeks ago the way they did, and then putting up 66 on Texas Tech last week. I think that they're going to continue to have that rolling. Obviously, the Longhorns have a good defense, but at the end of the day, can Texas's offense move the ball on Baylor's defense? You know, Texas's offense has struggled at times this year. And it's one of those things, okay, who's going to show up? Is it going to be Baylor's offense or Texas's defense? That's what I think it comes down to. I got to give a slight edge to RG3, and I like Baylor at home.
When was the last time we seen Texas was a underdog to Baylor? I don't know.
That's a long time.
And it's just one of those deals where this is going to be my upset pick of the week. Just because I really feel that Texas is a name brand.
Yeah.
My RG3 is pretty much a name brand now. I felt that the win that Texas won this past Thanksgiving will give them a nice little jump frog, and McCoy is doing some pretty good things there. He's just a young kid, and it's not really times when we'll sit here and be like, okay, who's Texas quarterback? We don't know who's Texas quarterback. We don't know his name or anything. The reason why we know McCoy, because his brother, Colt McCoy, and then Ash is a guy, he's coming along or whatnot, and I really feel that Colt McCoy's younger brother, Case, is doing a pretty good job. Ash been throwing a lot of interceptions compared to McCoy. McCoy type of style is a little bit different, more laid back. Ash is getting after it, as we see with the interceptions. But I really feel that Texas defense will show up, hopefully show up enough to sit there and overcome RG3's heir apparent tack, where he can throw the ball like crazy. He can run the ball when he needs to. And let's not forget, RG3 doesn't run the ball just to run the ball. So I feel that Texas will pretty much try to dictate how this game get played, and I really feel that Texas is going to win this game with their defense.
The one other comment I would just make here regarding RG3, the reason I said what I said about the Heisman is because right now, the three guys that I'm sure a lot of people are looking at are him, Andrew Luck, Trent Richardson. He's the only one of those three that's playing this weekend. So he has this is his stage to really, you know, put on a show and lay one final, you know, argument, if you will, to the voters out there saying, hey, you know what? Look at what I'm doing here at Baylor. And, you know, I'm leading this team potentially to a 9-3 record that, let's just be honest, if he's not on this team, they're irrelevant. With all due respect to everyone else, I mean, there may be a 5 or 6 win team without him. But with them, obviously, they're proven to be a legit Big 12 team. Now, moving forward to the SEC championship game. And this is the one that everyone's looking at. It's like, okay, is the SEC going to somehow end up with 3 BCS teams with Georgia pulling an upset? Or is LSU going to finish off the undefeated season? This game is in Atlanta. So, obviously, it's going to be kind of a de facto home game for Georgia. But to me, this game comes down to, can Georgia run the football? And I know they have good running backs with like Isaiah Crowell and whatnot, but they have to get a running game going because Aaron Murray is going to have a hard time throwing the ball in this LSU defense, especially that secondary. And I give LSU the edge here, not just because they are the best defense in the country right now. I think it's them or Alabama. It's a toss-up, but I give the slight edge to LSU here just because their front four has been at it all year. Their secondary has been at it all year. And this is one of those games that I feel, okay, if you get just enough from Jordan Jefferson or you get just enough from Russell Shepard and the backs that they have, because Georgia has a good defense too. It should be a low-scoring game, but I think LSU is just enough there that if they crack 21st, I have a hard time seeing them losing this game. I think they win. I think you're going to see them undefeated playing in the national championship.
I was getting ready to say the first team cracks 17 just to lower the standards just a little bit because Georgia has been a team that's been there, done it before, just like LSU, been there, done it before. LSU has a great defense. Georgia has some 3 pretty solid running backs, and if they can run the ball, we can be talking about a dogfight till it says 0 on the clock. Aaron Murray, he's, you ask me, he's first team ACC.
He's the best quarterback in the SEC, in my opinion. I agree with you there.
So, I mean, when you got him, if you put him in a factor and he'd be able to make some pretty solid decisions with throwing it to his receivers and tight ends and running backs, they got a chance, and it's one of those deals where LSU offense can show up or they can't show up. It's just one of those deals where LSU defense pretty much dictate throughout the game. I really want to pick Georgia because they're running backs, they're quarterbacks, but are their defense going to show up is my question. I don't care what LSU do. It's just one of those deals where Georgia has to show up. They have no chance if they don't show up on offense. Their defense. It's just, but I'm going to go with LSU. They're the better team. Tyrann Mathieu is playing lights out. I mean, he's probably the best player in the country this year, especially what he did this past week. I mean, he pretty much ended Arkansas's chance by himself, not the defense. He did it on punt return. He did make causing fumbles. It's just ridiculous. The guy, he's a Thorpe hand running away without a doubt. But I'm going with LSU.
And I'll say this, too. I think Georgia probably has more incentive here with this game because even though it's the SEC championship, a lot of people are saying, okay, LSU doesn't even have to win this game and they're still going to play for a national championship, whereas Georgia – this is the difference between them going to a Sugar Bowl if they win or maybe ending up in something like the Outback Bowl if they lose. So there's that to keep in mind, too. But
I was going to say a big but. If LSU – it depends on how LSU lose. Now, yeah, let's not forget about that.
That's true. But I think it's – to me, I have a heart – this we can go on a rant about this, too, but – I'll just say I'm not a huge proponent of teams that don't win their conference playing for a national championship. And even though Alabama might be the second best team in the country right now, I don't think that just seeing them get that shot again as opposed to, say, Oklahoma State or Virginia Tech who could win their conference, I have an issue with that. But, you know, again, we got to see what happens here Saturday. And for those of you who are out there that are still tuning in at this point, I know we've been on here for a while, but – Alabama fans, you're going to want LSU to win this game if you want the Hawkeyes to go to a decent bowl, because LSU winning is probably the ticket for Michigan getting into the BCS at this point. Moving along, we got three games left here. Bedlam, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State had a bye week after losing that heartbreaker in overtime to Iowa State. Oklahoma's coming off a win over Iowa State. All season long, I've been thinking, okay, this is where Oklahoma State's going to finally crack. You know, I didn't think it would happen 2 weeks ago in Ames. Here's why I'm going to go with Oklahoma State, though. First of all, Oklahoma's banged up. And they really have not looked that impressive since those injuries have taken place. They lost that game to Baylor. And Iowa State, to their credit, they hung with Oklahoma for a while there. And they forced turnovers. Oklahoma's offense, clearly not the same without Ryan Broyles there for Landry Jones to get the ball to. But I think, too, the fact that Oklahoma State did lose that game, I think almost plays to their advantage now, because chances are, okay, even if they win, they're not going to play for a national championship. So you no longer have that pressure mounting on you here that you would have had because if they beat Iowa State, for 2 weeks you're going to be hearing about, okay, you beat your rival, you're going to a national championship game. And I could see that you keep hearing that for two full weeks. I think that could be pressure that lays on you, as opposed to, okay, that pressure's off, just beat your rival, you win the conference, you're going to the Fiesta Bowl. I think that could play an edge, and I think this is a game where you're going to see Brandon Whedon and Justin Blackman make the plays necessary. And their defense, I know it hasn't been great, but if Oklahoma turns the ball over like it did last Saturday, Oklahoma State's got the defense. They can, you know, force turnovers effectively, and that could really put their offense in a position to capitalize. I think this is the year Oklahoma State finally wins this game. I'm going with the Cowboys.
I really think this is going to be a really good game. It can be a low-scoring game and really good. It can be a high-scoring game, really good. But do Oklahoma offense has enough to sit there and keep scoring like they used to with Burrows actually in the lineup? No. I feel that Kenny Stills is a really good receiver, and the other two guys that they have is pretty good. But I think the X factor of this game, you're going to laugh at me, but I think it's going to be the Bulldozer. I mean, the backup quarterback, this 6'4", 240-pound backup. Yes, he's phenomenal.
Reminds me a lot of Tim Tebow from his freshman year when Florida won the national championship in 06 and they had him backing up Chris Lee.
Yeah, so let's not get into no 3rd-and-1s, 4th-and-1s for Oklahoma State, because Oklahoma's going to run the ball down their throat. And that guy cannot be stopped. And, I mean, every time he steps in, it's usually a first down, a touchdown, something like that. I feel that Landry Jones should be able to put on a good performance. I just feel that Oklahoma really needs to buckle down on Blaylock. If they buckle down on Blackman. Ugh, Blaylock. I don't know where to get that from. But Blackman, they should be ready to go. I mean, they have a shutdown corner, senior, and I feel that the weakness in Oklahoma's defense are its safeties. And, you know, we don't know how long their defensive lineman will be down, their defensive tackle will be down, but it's just one of those deals. I really feel that Oklahoma actually win this game on the road, because they got to prove a lot. I mean, they lost at home to Oklahoma. They got beat down on the road at Texas Tech, and they need a game where they sit here outside of Texas, where that game seems like it was ages ago, to sit here and be like, okay, this is our season, and say, hey, we're a legit team.
And to establish here, too, the winner of this game will go to the Fiesta Bowl, because they'll win the Big 12. Either Oklahoma State outright or Oklahoma wins the head-to-heads on that Oklahoma State and Kansas State. Two other comments I'd make, though. One, if Oklahoma was at full strength, I would say they're a better team than Oklahoma State at full strength, but they're not. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what I just see hurting this team. And I also, going back to the comment I made about the pressure kind of being off Oklahoma State, I think that plays along to what Mike Gundy, the comment that he made this week about, yeah, you know what, Alabama probably is the second best team in the country. If I had a vote, I would say that they are instead of my team, because you know what? I think he doesn't want that pressure mounting on his players at this point. I think it's one of those situations where it's just like, okay, just win this game. In the worst case scenario, you're going to the Fiesta Bowl, which, hey, for Oklahoma State, that's a good bowl game for them. You know, it might not be playing for a national, it might not be getting their shot at LSU, but, you know, hey, that's not a bad consolation prize. Now, the ACC championship game, this is a rematch from a game back in October. Clemson absolutely demolished Virginia Tech up in Blacksburg. These teams are meeting in Charlotte Saturday night. They've both kind of taken completely different turns, though. Virginia Tech hasn't lost since that game. And Clemson, meanwhile, has lost two straight, got embarrassed at NC State, and then last week they lost pretty big to South Carolina. I went with Virginia Tech last time, and obviously that didn't come to fruition. I'm going to go with Virginia Tech this time, though, because, again, they've been clicking since then, and they destroyed Virginia last week in a game that decided that division, whereas Clemson one of the big reasons why Clemson struggled is Taj Boyd struggled here lately. He was off to a fantastic start, as you were alluding to earlier this year, and that was a big reason why they were undefeated up until the final week in October. But now they've lost, I believe, 3 out of 4, and something's up there. I don't know what. The fact that they're coming in reeling, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in them winning this game as a result. Whereas when they went into Blacksburg, they were clicking on all cylinders because they beat Auburn and Florida State. I just think Virginia Tech, they're going to be out for blood, if you will. And they've been in this position. They're looking at their fourth ACC title in 5 years. I think they get it done.
I was going to say, looking from the outside in, you sit there and you look at pretty much what Virginia Tech been doing for a while now throughout the season, and then you look at Clemson. They're coming in pretty much not even stumbling. They're literally on crutches in a wheelchair, getting into this game, saying, "Hey, man, do we even deserve to be in this game?" But I mean, off the play that they played early in the season, how hot they were. Yes, you deserve to be in that game, but it's just one of those deals. When you lose to a bad team in NC State, you sit there and say, "Oh no, no way!" And then you sit there and turn around and lose to South Carolina, which is a pretty good team on the road. So it's just one of those deals. You sit there and you scratch your head as a South Carolina fan. And I mean, not South Carolina, but a Clemson fan, or South Carolina, either one, because both of them lost some, a lot of things with Lattimore out and Garcia gone in South Carolina. But Clemson, it's tough, man. It's tough to see them win. I'm going with Virginia Tech. It's just one of those deals. Virginia Tech have a phenomenal running back. You can't really ask for a better running back that's been under the radar. I mean, he's played as well as Monty Ball and Trent Richardson. Yeah. He just haven't had the games that he can sit there and pinpoint like, hey, this is my game.
And going back, and by the way, the winner of this game goes to the Orange Bowl, just to clear that up. Going back to a point I made last week when we were talking about Virginia Tech. If they win this game, I think they have a legit argument for playing for a national championship, because they would be beating the one team that they lost to in the final week of the season. And if you look at the complete body of work, it's okay. Yeah, they lost that one game, and it was at home, and it was embarrassing. But they got their payback against them, and they beat everyone else on their schedule. And this is a team. It's not like they're a fluke. As I said, they've won 3 of the last 4. This would be 4 out of 5 ACC championships for them. The 1 year, ironically, they didn't win it is the year that you guys put Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl. But so with that in mind, it's like, okay, this is a team that's proven itself. Even though they're coming from the ACC and maybe they didn't have the best non-conference schedule, it's not like this isn't like Houston or a Boise State from years past. Virginia Tech's Virginia Tech. They have Frank Beamer. They have, you know, they're known for their Beamer ball special teams. Their defense has been solid. I'm not saying that they would give LSU a game, but they could. We're probably never going to know, but to me, that's a legit argument. If you could get payback against the one team that beat you later in the year. And now, finally, the Big Ten championship game. Wisconsin, Michigan State. As I said before, that this is a rematch of a game in October. Michigan State won on the final play, 37-31. Keith Nichols touchdown pass or reception from Kirk Cousins. This game's in Indianapolis. Saturday night, Fox, Gus Johnson calling it, along with Charles Davis and Tim Brewster. How do you see round 2 between Bucky and Sparty playing out here?
I see this going to be a well-played game until Wisconsin, if they do, they take off. I just figure if Wisconsin take off, this game might be over with pretty fast, where they're looking for a redemption, big time. Not only redemption, they have a Rose Bowl berth here on the line. For Michigan State, it's just one of those deals sitting here. Like D'Antonio came there and said, hey, we're going to get a Rose Bowl. And if they get a Rose Bowl, it's just, I mean, their support will go beyond means. The guy got an extension and all this stuff. And the team has just been a solid team. I mean, it's completely different from last year. Yeah, their stars is not stars from last year. But, I mean, they have a pretty good defensive tackle that can pretty much take care of Monty Ball and give some offensive linemen crap throughout the game. I think this is a harder pick than what a lot of people actually think, just because Michigan State has been playing some pretty solid defense, but Wisconsin offense can pretty much turn it on and off whenever they can. But I'm going with Wisconsin for redemption. They win big, going to the Rose Bowl, which I think is going to be a really good game if they end up playing Oregon.
Now, I think either team would make it an interesting game against Oregon, to tell you the truth, but especially Wisconsin. But to me, here's what I'll say. Wisconsin, they did pretty much exactly what I thought they would do. Their big stretches in late October, but they handled everything else. And you figured, okay, at some point they're going to get it going again and they're going to be here. So they pretty much met expectations. Michigan State, if you recall what I said to you back in October, right before they played Ohio State, and we had like a 10-minute discussion on that game, I was saying at the time then how that game was going to be make or break for Michigan State given its schedule. They ended up winning that game. They ended up winning their division. You know, they went 7-1 in the Big Ten this year. And they won those big games against Michigan and Wisconsin. And they came into Iowa a few weeks ago and beat the Hawkeyes. I think Michigan State gets it done Saturday and continues to have Wisconsin's number here. And the reason why I say that is, while Wisconsin maybe is a more explosive team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think Michigan State's just a more well-rounded team. They have just enough at each position on offense. They have a really good quarterback in Kirk Cousins. I'm not going to sit here and say he's better than Russell Wilson, because I think Wilson is better, but he's a proven quarterback. They have a proven backfield. They have a deep threat in B.J. Cunningham that can make big plays at any time. Their offensive line got better as the season progressed. Their defense, as you said, especially their front four, is nasty. They, I believe, have third overall in yards allowed per game, which says a lot. That's nationally, not just in the Big Ten. I just think this is one of those games where Wisconsin, they're going to be keying in on Monty Ball, and Russell Wilson's going to have to win this game for Wisconsin. And I just don't know if he's going to be able to ultimately do that in the end. I think he'll make his plays, and I think Wisconsin will get points, but I just think Michigan State, they're gonna do just enough here. And the other point I would make, too, is this is where special teams, you know, D'Antonio is going to have tricks up his sleeve here, whether it's a fake field goal, a fake punt, or something. And Wisconsin, the two games they lost this year, special teams really hurt them. They had a punt blocked by Ohio State in that game. And Michigan State, I believe they I'm trying to remember. I think it was another blocked punt there, too. But the fact of the matter is, I think the ultimate edge, I give – just the slightest edge to Michigan State. And I think at the end of the night, you're going to see Sparty partying on down in Pasadena. And I'm going to say, I'll say 31-28. I think it'll be kind of similar to what you saw up in East Lansing last month or 2 months ago. But I just think Michigan State's slightly better because they're just more well-rounded than Wisconsin.
All right. I was getting ready to say, when you come down to, you got two coaches, sit there and bring up some mimics. It's both of these coaches. Bielema, he's known to take his risks. He's known to take a lot of risks. And D'Antoni has a phenomenal, well-rounded team, like you say. It's just one of those deals where he don't have a lump-sided team. Last year was a pretty good team where you had some good receivers. You got an offense, running backs, quarterbacks, and then on defense you had some very veteran guys on the back end, and then the defensive line were younger guys, but they were stepping it up. And then linebacker, starting with Greg Jones, one of the best out there in the country last year. So it's just one of those deals, like you say, they're well-rounded. You always, you would want to take a well-rounded team compared to a one team that's sitting there, oh, we got a great offense or a great defense. But like I said, I'm a stay with Wisconsin, but this is going to be a really good game. Like you say, whoever wins, you can't really.
Well, I think whoever wins is a worthy champion. I mean, these are clearly, in my opinion, these are clearly, and I know Michigan has a chance at a BCS game here, but these are the two best teams in the Big Ten. I think they've proven that over the course of 3 months here, that they're clearly the two best teams. And Wisconsin, yeah, they have a decent defense. I would say Michigan State is a significantly better defense. And I would say the offenses, I don't think there's as big a discrepancy there as some might think. Yes, Wisconsin has Russell Wilson and Monty Ball, and I think that they're both better individually than what Michigan State has. But Michigan State has a little of everything, and I think that will ultimately lead to having a balanced attack offensively, and I think that's what you need in a game like this.
I was going to say the last thing I got about this game is the X factor of this game is Nick Toon. I mean, the guy.
I agree.
We really haven't seen much Nick Toon in a couple years here. I mean, like, the guy had a pretty good, solid career there, but Nick Toon hasn't really stepped up all this year. This is the game for him to step up, and I really feel that he will.
And real quickly before we go here, because we're not going to have a podcast next week. We will have one more podcast this season after the bowl announcement's made. It'll probably be sometime close to Christmas, but depending on I'll share more details on that later this month on the site. But the Heisman Trophy, I know it's really kind of jumbled right now, but that's going to be announced next week. Who do you ultimately see holding the hardware?
I see Trent Richardson. I haven't really seen a lot of Alabama, but, like, just off the actual play that they've been playing, is you can go either or with both best teams, like you say, with LSU and Alabama. But Trent Richardson has had a crazy week this past weekend, which I actually seen a lot of this game, but I haven't really seen him a lot this year, and he's been pretty much under radar just because all kinds of things that's been going on throughout the season. I see him number one, finishing in the final rankings, and then two, I go RG3, who's going to have a pretty decent game hopefully this weekend, then Andrew Luck, who a guy who's been there pretty much from start to finish.
I agree that I think that those are the top three, and I'll just say Trent Richardson at the beginning of the year was my preseason pick to win the Heisman Trophy, so I don't really have a reason to jump away from that now. Like you said, I do think RG3 has an opportunity to seize it here if he has a phenomenal game against Texas, but that might be asking a little too much. I think at the end of the day, too, when you look at Trent Richardson, yeah, he had the defining run of the season for him was a game against Ole Miss where he had the cutback and then still ended up scoring. Granted, that wasn't the best of competition, but still, that was a heck of a play. And I think ultimately what I see kind of being the final decision for me and why I would give a slight edge to Richardson here is that LSU game, even though Alabama lost, he wasn't the reason why they lost. He had over 100 yards rushing in that game. And I feel like if they were – LSU eventually teed on him, and it led to Alabama missing those field goals. But for a while there, he was clearly the best player. He looked like the best player on the field there, and that was when you had LSU's defense out there. He looked like the best player on the field there. That's why I would have to probably give him a slight edge at the end of the day. But, again, keep an eye on – Griffin and see how he does against Texas Saturday, because that could sway some voters, but I think at the end it will be Trent Richardson that wins it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. A reminder that we will be back later in December here after we find out where Iowa's going, and we will have a podcast looking ahead to Iowa's bowl game and discussing all the bowl games featuring Big Ten teams as well as all the BCS games, including that national championship. Reminder, if you are interested in becoming a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial. We also have 9 monthly subscriptions and $9.99 a month, yearly subscriptions at $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. They give you access to everything on the site, both free and premium. Chris, thank you again for this week and really for this whole season. It's been fun having you as a part of this all year long. And for Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Stiles, signing off.